This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Warning. This is a comedy podcast that provides an irreverent, sarcastic, less than serious look at events described in the Bible. It contains profanity and explicit content and may not be suitable for children under 14. Listener discretion and a sense of humor strongly advised.
In a world where the Holy Bible is actually a streaming television show with a gigantic special effects budget, two people boldly watch and review every episode. Join these scripture script doctors as they discuss all the on-screen drama and off-screen hijinks of this fictional hit series.
Welcome back to Wrath of Pod. My name is Deanna.
And my name is Marcus.
And we've got a heck of an episode for you today. But before we get to it, I just wanted to make a quick note about our man Moses. I think we've stopped noticing this because it's just become so much a part of his character. Ever since season two, Moses has needed a veil over his face whenever he's interacting with the Israelites because he got the world's most epic sunburn from interacting directly with God.
Wear sunscreen. If I could offer you only one tip for the future, sunscreen would be it.
And I just wanted to start off by giving a real shout to the CG folks for making it look so cool. It almost looks like he has a kind of translucent heat shimmer over his face. So we both get the sense that he has this veil on, and we actually get to see a lot of his face. So I thought that was a really elegant solution.
Yeah, at times it reminded me a bit of Watchmen, reminded me of Rorschach's mask, where he has a mask that's like a Rorschach test. So the actual ink on the mask is itself moving around and showing up different things based on what he's thinking. And that's a Rorschach test. You can, you know, you read into it. I saw that they were doing something a little bit similar here. When he got angry, parts of the shimmer would kind of come together in a little more of a jagged-like way. When he was mellow, it would kind of smooth out. I found that was pretty cool. Nice visual storytelling.
Yeah, I think it's a really great effect. Maybe they got the same shop as Watchmen to do the special effects. I'm not sure, but there's somebody whose specialty is making those kinds of CG masks, and
Right. They're
just rocking it.
Your turn, Doctor. Tell me, what do you see?
So having said that, why don't we see what else is happening with Season 4, Episode 2 of The Holy Bible.
Last time on Wrath of Pod.
It's Season 4.
So we open with God. He puts in a call to Moses to take a census of all of the men over the age of 20, so that God will know how many people are available to fight in the army. We find out within the first 5 minutes of the first episode of the season why it's called Numbers, because there are so many numbers. The tribe of Levi is a little bit separate. They're going to be taking care of the tabernacle and doing sacrifices and a bunch of other priestly duties.
If you're born in the tribe of Levi, you are dedicated to these duties. We start off with people from the house of Gershon being told that if they are between the ages of 30 and 50, they've got some duties at the tabernacle. So this builds off of last week's episode where duties were being assigned to all of the different families and their houses and so forth. Last week, I thought, okay, now they've assigned all the duties. Next week, it's going to be action time. We're going to have all kinds of crazy stuff happening, and they're going to be running like that meme with the thing on fire and the person running in. And yeah, I thought it was going to be like that. And each person was, maybe we jump from each person to person doing their little bit of the puzzle, kind of like an Ocean's 11 style thing, where you like you jump and see each piece of the puzzle and how it all works. No, we've just got more allocations of duties, because apparently it really matters who's handling the curtains, because that is one of the people of House of Gershon's duties, is the curtains. Won't somebody think of the curtains?
That Ocean's 11 style heist would have been a lot more exciting than we got. And no battle sequences either. Nothing is made of this army that they had assembled in last episode. We are all about the curtains. This is the Gershon wash and fold.
Yeah.
And there's also seemingly a mandatory retirement age. So you only have these responsibilities up until age 50. So we have now established that God is homophobic and ableist, and now he's ageist too.
On the one hand, if you're 50 and you're effectively retired, that's not a terrible life.
Yeah, that sounds great, doesn't it?
So I sort of saw it as the state retirement pension system kicks in at 50, which, if that's true, that sounds like a pretty good deal.
Yeah, that's true. I like your glass half full on this. Yeah, if you look at this a different way, you only have to work between the ages of 30 and 50. You only have 20 years of your life where you're actually in active service on curtain duty, and then it's curtains for you.
Oh, nice.
I'm the worst. Moving on.
That or crickets.
Yes. Yeah, that deserves crickets, I think. Give me those crickets.
And this is not just applying to the House of Gershon, because the House of Merari, who last time associated with a car with a logo, I remember being blurred out, they too, between the ages of 30 and 50, are responsible for certain things. For them, it's the boards and the pillars and the sockets and so forth.
I'm glad Merari's back. I think we didn't get quite a clear view of him, just like we don't have a clear view of the car, but I swear it's Vin Diesel.
Oh.
Definitely, there was a very distinctive bald head in and among the people of the House of Merari who were learning how to break down the tabernacle and move the boards, and I'm putting my money on the fact that it was Vin Diesel.
Cool, good catch.
I don't have friends. I got family.
And then Moses and Aaron are taking another census. This time it's a census of the Levites from the houses of Kohath, Gershon, and Merari between the ages of 30 and 50. And it turns out there's 8,580 of them.
I was wondering who gets to carry the radio setup. Is that all on Moses? Right? Everybody else is carrying bits and pieces of the tabernacle and the silverware and the curtains and the pillars and stuff. And it seems like they couldn't spare anybody to help Moses break down all of that broadcasting stuff and all of the button boards and things like that. So he's just all on his own, poor guy.
Yeah, he's carrying a lot. I did notice he had a giant backpack with a big metal box, almost like a portable radio setup from like the 70s or something.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's having to drag all of that on his own.
It's hard to look like a stately and solemn and authoritative leader when you've got a giant aerial sticking out of the back of your backpack. I think his veil was doing that little angry shimmer during that section, as he was pretty pissed that he had to take care of all that himself.
Yes.
If Aaron's the priest, does that make Moses like the Pope? Is that how this works? Because the priests are like responsible for actually ministering to the day-to-day of doing stuff for the people when they need to come worship, and then Moses is kind of supervising and above it all. So we've got Pope Moses the 14th.
That fits, because he's also the one who's having the direct one-on-one contact with God. So that also fits with the Pope analogy. Also explains his outrageous hat as well.
Yes. I definitely want one of those. Maybe for the upcoming con, we can make some cool Pope Moses hats and show up in costume like that.
Imagine a golf cart that seemed like the Pope Mobile, but it's Moses, and driving around a convention where you've got the kind of crazy hat, you're in the Pope Mobile, counting people as you go, because you're not just Moses, but you're Moses from the season of Numbers. So you're just going like 1, 2, 3, 4, mm-hmm. 5. Yeah. I mean, you might accidentally start insulting people, because if someone's like 29 and you start counting them, they're like, hey, I'm not 30 yet. What are you talking about? Mm-hmm. Like, sorry. Yeah. And then flattering a lot of people over like 55 and they're getting counted like, yeah, still got it.
Or going around asking everybody, are you a firstborn? Are you a firstborn? Are you a firstborn? Are you? I'm just trying to find all the firstborns. All the firstborns over here. We're going to assemble everybody in one side of the artist's hall and make sure that we've got all the firstborns counted. Surprisingly, again, oh, this is so on brand for our Holy Bible show. We've got God calling down with a bunch more rules, and a lot of them are review. So anyone who is unclean because they have leprosy, because they've had a discharge, because they've touched a corpse, should be put outside of the camp. And if you do anything wrong, if you break any one of these laws, you need to confess that you have done something, and then you need to make restitution for what you did, plus 1/5. So you need to pay back, for example, whatever you stole with interest. Which makes sense, again, if you stole something that has a kind of monetary value and you can pay it back 1/5, but what if you were engaged in witchcraft or sorcery? How do you take 1/5 of witchcraft and pay that back?
There's no such thing as magic.
That's a good point. It does assume that there's a very clear monetary value for whatever's being done. Maybe this is one of those cases where there's a table, like an equivalence table, so you can say witchcraft is like one goat, so you owe 1/5 of a goat.
Goats are more divisible than witchcraft.
Yeah.
Maybe you owe them back like some herbs, or like a section of a scrying bowl, or 1/5 of a voodoo doll or something like that.
Or maybe if you do it 5 times, you have to then do some witchcraft in the favor of one of the top people, Aaron or someone like that. You have to help him out, luck spell or something like that.
Yeah. You get a punch card, like how many times have you committed witchcraft or sorcery, and they're keeping track of you. 5 strikes and you are out.
Amen.
And then there's this kind of cool ceremony, which is meant to see if a wife has been unfaithful to her husband. So if the dude either knows, or even if he just gets jealous and suspects that his wife has been unfaithful, they need to go to the priest, and they're going to bring an offering of plain barley meal. And then the woman undergoes this test. She holds this barley offering, and the priest mixes dust from the floor of the tabernacle into holy water. After that, the priest tells her nothing will happen if she hasn't been unfaithful. But if she has, then God will curse her when she drinks the water. And I wrote this one down because this was a very interesting combination of consequences. Her belly will swell and her thigh will rot. Thigh rot is the curse for unfaithfulness. Mm. Where does God come up with this stuff?
Sometimes you just have to bow to the absurd.
And why is this so convoluted? God knows either way what has been happening. He knows everything. So he knows what's been happening. So why is he having them go through this? If you're going to put the rule in place, you can make it so there's some sort of automatic punishment. It just happens. Mm-hmm. What is with all of this drinking of the water and the barley and all of this stuff? He's being so dramatic about it when it could just be automated.
Maybe there's a glitch in the program. He was trying to convert it out of JavaScript into something more modern, and he just could not get the if-then statements to line up properly. So he's like, fuck it, we're doing it manually.
We're adding barley.
Right. Yeah, that's not working. Weird date night idea, bro. Hey, honey, let's go to the priest with some barley, and you're going to drink this punishment water. Everyone's always looking for more ideas of things to do with their boo. Right? You go roller skating or hot air ballooning or test for adultery-ing. Like, it's the hot new trend.
I also wondered if this is so convoluted because it was trying to get a confession out of the person. So kind of like lie detector tests. They're notoriously unreliable. and they don't actually reliably detect if a person is lying. But the very threat of having a lie detector administered to you can lead a person to confess. So I wondered if that was part of it. So it's like, maybe we should go and do this. And then the person's like, no, I confess, I admit. Yeah. Don't need to go through the belly swelling and the thigh rotting and stuff.
I love that headcanon. I'm going with that. Because that makes so much more sense than the actual explanation, which is that God just wanted to pick the most dramatic, drawn out possible way to do anything about this husband gets jealous situation. To wrap up this ceremony, the priest writes the curses down in a book and scrapes the curse into the water. I thought this was cool. I hadn't seen this as part of a magic ceremony in movies or TV shows or games, that actually the letters of the curse and the ink and the paper that they're written on are scraped into the holy water and mixed with the water and given to the woman to drink. So at the very least, God is coming up with some really cool, creative new ways to implement this ceremony. Give him credit for that.
Yeah, that's true. It depends on what you're using to write. I know at one point in the 70s, I think it was the 70s, they were using lead in pencils for a while. At least in the UK, famously. And then it became graphite, but it was lead before that. And so this would be a case where I'd hope they wouldn't be using lead in those pencils.
You know what it is? It's blood. It is 100% blood. If you're really going to go for it, you need like the holy water and the dust of the earth, and you are writing this curse in blood and scraping that into the drink. I've just convinced myself that has to be it.
That works.
And then the woman drinks the water, and if she hasn't been unfaithful, nothing will happen. But if she has, then she will be affected by the curse in the water, and her belly will swell and her thigh will rot. Is Thigh Rot the new Sons of Heth album? It really
Yeah. I do not want to see that cover art, though.
Right.
That's pretty gruesome.
This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Amen. Next, we learn that there is this vow that people can do to what they call separate themselves from the Lord. But it's a weird way of phrasing it, because actually it means getting closer to him and dedicating yourself to him. And who decided that the name for this vow would be the Nazi Rite vow? The words, really, the vow is Nazi Rite.
Wow. Ooh, that should not have gotten past legal.
Yes. You would think at least someone would punch it up to Nazi wrong. At the very least, do that.
Yeah.
Yes. You would think not. So I guess maybe if they always pronounced it differently every time it was said, and they said it as Nazarite, that no one actually took the time to look at what it looked like written down. Maybe that's what was happening.
Yeah, that makes sense. Definitely, we know that sometimes things get rushed into production here. There are changes made at the last minute, and I think that one must have just slipped through the cracks. Should we go Nazarite for this recording?
I think that's a good call.
Yeah. I think this is how you get to the VIP line.
Right.
And you get behind that velvet rope sooner, right? So you get to make it onto their front lawn. It's like paying for the higher level on the Patreon or something, and you get a bunch of cool behind the scenes content and bonus apps and that
good
kind
analogy.
Of thing. Yeah, I think he's just making up crazy shit at this point to limit the number of visitors.
So one thing the vow involves is not eating any grapes or grape products. So that includes wine, includes vinegar, not cutting your hair, and not going near dead bodies. There was a rule about that, but you had an exception for family. Unfortunately, this is now any dead bodies, including your own relatives. But before we go on, not drinking any wine, that's going to be harder for some people than others.
Actually, that was not the deal breaker part of it for me. I'm like, okay, if I set this for like 2 weeks, I can manage without grapes and wine and vinegar. Then you try not to go near any dead bodies anyway. That's fine. The hair shaving would have gotten me. So you don't cut your hair for the time of the vow. But then when your vow is over, you have to shave your head. And that is just a complete deal breaker for me. I went snorkeling once in very cold water. And so I was wearing one of those scuba hoods and I got a look at myself, which is what I would look like if I didn't have any hair. And let's just say it was not pretty. Let's hope that never happens. It was not a good look for me. Vin Diesel's like, yeah, I'm in. I can do this.
And this kind of has this odd consequence where if someone happens to die nearby someone who's taken the vow, that's when they have to shave their head and bring two pigeons or turtle doves as an offering. Basically, they're done. The rest of the period of this vow has been ruined. So if you're on the vow, you don't want to be hanging around any old people's homes. You want to make sure that you're not chilling in hospitals.
You might just want to stay far away from anybody. Then you're also not tempted to drink. Although it's only grape products, it seems like you can have as much bourbon as you damn well please. Just
cider. Sure. Could have mead. Does mead have grapes in it?
No.
Ah, good. There you go. Mead.
Yep.
That'd be my drink of choice. And once you've reached the end of this vow period, and as a reminder, this is also you can get this VIP status with God. Mm-hmm. Then you bring a bunch of offerings to the tabernacle, a male lamb, female lamb, a ram, a basket of unleavened bread, cakes made with oil, wafers, and drink offerings. Basically, just a bunch of stuff you're just bringing with you at the end of the vow period. And the priest then is going to make these sacrifices. And that's when the person shaves their head. And not just that, they put the hair on the fire that's burning the sacrifice. Yep. That is going to stink up the place.
I was literally just going to say that. This seems like a terrible idea. If you've ever singed your hair while cooking or lighting candles, like, oh, God, it smells awful. Is this like the thing that the goth kids are doing in high school, right? Like somebody comes in with a shaved head and be like, yeah, I'm doing the vow. Yeah, it seems that's the right thing. You wouldn't get it.
Yeah, and then there's going to be some who would like to be doing it, but they're not fully committed. So they do cut a little bit of their hair and light it with the match. And then it's like, man, it doesn't really count.
Yeah, their parents won't let them do it. You're like, Mom, come on. Everybody else is shaving their head and setting their hair on fire and bringing two turtle doves to God, and they can get the cool VIP passes.
So then we have a return of the wave offering, because that's what the person does next. They do a wave offering with a ram shoulder, unleavened cake, and one wafer. And then once they've done that, they're done. And they can go back to wine, go back to their vinegar, do all of their normal stuff. Yeah. But for that period, they were one of God's VIPs, for sure.
Maybe God is setting up a little bit of competition with Molech, because he knows that everybody wants to get into Molech's club, so he has to think of something to keep all of the kids coming to his club.
And then at the end of this section, the camera angle shows us we're a bit far away, so we don't hear exactly what's happening, but we see God teaching Aaron a new blessing and their sons that they could say to the Israelites. And it's interesting because you can see God pantomiming what you need to do for this blessing. And at one point, he's on one leg hopping. It's a bit of Ministry of Silly Walks at times, showing Aaron the blessing and what needs to be done. It's like almost like a Dance Dance Revolution at times, where his feet are moving so rapidly and there's just a lot going on, apparently, in this new blessing.
Yeah, there was some fancy footwork from God. I like the part where he transitioned a bit to, like, kindergarten music class, and he got out, like, the egg shakers, and he had his guitar and was like, okay, everyone, we're gonna learn a new blessing today. Sing it on after me. So all of the different houses of the Levites do what they need to do, and Moses works with them to finish setting up the tabernacle. And then the leaders of all of the tribes bring offerings to the tabernacle. There's one covered cart for every two tribes, and every tribe brings an oxen. And Moses gives these carts and oxen to the Levites, specifically the houses of Gershon and Merari, so that they can travel with all of the heavy parts of the tabernacle using these ox-drawn carts. Then the leaders of each tribe bring in a set of special offerings to celebrate the setting up of the tabernacle. This was like a big showy party scene again, where everybody's coming in with their carts and their floats and their kick lines, and they're all in uniform. So I guess they're saving a little money on the costumes this week, because they're just reusing a lot of the costumes that they had last week. And because there's so much going on in this scene, we have another edition of Name That Blessing. But in this case, it's Name That Offering for all of these offerings that the tribes are bringing to God.
We want you to tell us the answer.
You want answers?
We'd really like an answer.
Former winners include Nobel laureates, Fields Medal winners, renowned astrophysicists.
That's okay, I'm just auditing.
Okay, you can do this. You got this. All right. Every single one of the tribes brings the same set of offerings. And I don't know about you, but I definitely fell asleep in my popcorn at this point because it was so goddamn repetitive. But here we go. Which of these was not part of the offering? Option A, a gold pan full of incense. Option B, a silver bowl full of oil. Or option C, a bronze platter full of grain.
Oh, goodness. I'll go with A.
Nope. Duh. Gold pan full of incense was one of the things that was ordered, but not the bronze platter full of grains.
I should have known. He wanted the gold, and in second best, he wanted the silver, and he's just like, don't even bother me with the bronze. Yeah, I'm not into that.
How many animals in total did each tribe bring for the offering? I'll give you within, let's say, 20% on each side.
Per tribe, okay.
Per tribe. Each tribe brings this many animals.
40.
21.
Oh. It felt like 40.
Yeah, it felt like 40. I know. I'm with you. I'm like 300. This went on for... Yes, a bull, a ram, a lamb, a goat kid, 2 oxen, 5 rams, 5 goats, and 5 lambs. Total of 21. I was getting like Elvis vibes here. It's like a bull and a goat and a ram and a lamb, a ding dong. Ooh, ee, ooh, ram, lamb, lamb, a ding dong.
I don't know. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Okay, last question. This one's multiple choice, so you got a 1 in 3 shot. What kind of offerings were these animals designated for? Was it a sin offering, a trespass offering, or a joy offering? your face is amazing right now. Your face is always amazing. That's not what I mean.
I'm probably going to regret it, but I will go with trespass offering.
Nope.
Was it sin offering? I thought it was too obvious. I was like, that is so obvious.
Oh,
there's
no
way it would be that. And then I talked myself out of the obvious answer.
You overthought your way out of the obvious answer. I don't know, folks. Should we give it to him? All right. The people say that we should give it to him. Congratulations, 1 for 3 on this round of Name That Blessing / Offering.
Amen.
Mummy Joseph is there checking people off his clipboard as they come through.
You let the mummy in.
It was good to see him. Mm-hmm. And I think there's going to be some weird jealousy among the tribes, right? Like they all get to the tabernacle ceremony together and it turns out that they've all brought the same thing. And it's like, wait, God told you to bring a silver platter of 130 shekels filled with oil mixed with flour? That's what he told me to bring. I thought I was special. God's like trying to simultaneously date all 12 tribes and he's not pulling it off. He forgot about like tabernacle prom and he needed to just pick a date.
Yeah, you're right. It's awkward when you go to a place and you and someone else brought the same gift or something like that. This is that in the extreme.
Maybe the explanation is that he's an old person who doesn't know how to work the DoorDash and he kept putting the same order in 12 times, not realizing that he'd already submitted it. And then everybody shows up with whatever 12 times 21 animals is. It really looked like it was about to be a stampede on set. I think they were regretting doing the animals for real rather than just using CGI. And no camels. I wanted to just note this. There's bulls and goats and ram-a-lam-a-ding-dong, but no llamas, I guess, and no camels. What's with the Camels.
Now, tell me, what exactly are you doing?
Well, I'm camel spotting. I'm spotting to see if there are any camels that I can spot and put them down in my camel spotting book.
Good. And how many camels have you spotted so far?
Well, so far, Peter, up to the present moment, I've spotted nearly... nearly one.
Nearly one?
Call it none.
Maybe God's got a collection of them, and that's why he's not asking for them anymore. He's just like, the last thing I want is camels. It's like when someone's bringing you a gift, and you're like, okay, anything but olive oil. I'm drowning in olive oil here, you know, for the housewarming gift kind of thing. Anything but the camels. I've got too many of them.
Maybe that's it. But more olive oil. God can never have enough olive oil. Yeah, he is, in fact, drowning in olive oil, but he always
needs
more.
And he loves it. Yes.
Well, he's got to lubricate that Scrooge McDuck pool full of shekels.
Right.
That's how it works. And the last thing that happens here is that Moses goes into the tabernacle to talk to God. So God appears on the mercy seat on top of the ark. And this was such a cliffhanger. God literally opens his mouth to start to say something to Moses. And that's where the episode ends. Oh, such a tease. God, this show keeping me on the edge of my seat.
Yeah, you literally heard the breath intake going as if you're about to say something, and then it just cut to black. And I was just like, I groaned. I audibly groaned as that happened.
They're just trying to keep us coming back next week. But for this week, we need to find out, Marcus, what do we think about this God character?
I am not the God of war. I am the God of truth.
God likes to watch. He's a prankster.
Blasphemy. You're lucky I don't cast you out or smite you or something.
You've been doing a lot of complaining about me. Quite frankly, I'm tired of it.
How shall we fuck off, O Lord?
Well, we haven't had much contact with him. I guess I would say that he knows what he likes because he kept ordering a bunch of different offerings. On the one hand, he could spread out a bit. He could be a bit more diverse with his interests. But on the other hand, I respect him for leaning into what he likes. If he likes bowls, he likes lambs, and he's going to ask everyone to bring a ton of them. So for that reason, I'm sort of respecting him for sticking with his guns and sticking with what he likes and not letting other people convince him that his interests aren't valid. So that's where I'm heading. How about you?
Well, you're more positive than I was. I was very neutral. And possibly because I was neutral, I was feeling a little bit negative. Like, I should be feeling a little bit more strongly for the main character of this series. Maybe, like I said before, they're trying to shift our sympathies to Moses, or they're trying to back away from the God character as being the central character. This is one of the ways that they're doing it. But otherwise, I was kind of on God.
A blessing from the Lord.
Before Deanna and Marcus wrap up this episode, I am here to tell you that my 11th commandment is, you shall not enjoy this podcast without rating and reviewing it.
Good idea, O Lord.
Help others to find this podcast by rating and reviewing it on your podcast app. Now let's return to the action.
God be praised.
Me be praised. God out.
Now we've reached that point in the episode where I asked you, Deanna, what was the weirdest name?
I'm sorry, what was your name again?
Say my name.
Bicus. Dicus.
You're goddamn right.
I have a very great friend in Rome called Bicus Dicus.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Wait, no, seriously, what's your actual name?
Wait, your Bicus Dicus hears of this.
Oh, wow. I had so much trouble picking this week. This is like fantasy name generator on steroids. There were so many. I'm going with Ithamar, who is one of Aaron's sons, and his name is just It Hammer.
Because she's with Captain Hammer, and these are not the hammer. The hammer is my penis.
And it's not quite as weird as some of the ones that we had in season one, but really? You named your kid after a rapper from the 90s?
Stop! Hammer time!
So, what was your pick for this week?
My pick this week was Duel, D-E-U-E-L, because every time we saw him on screen and someone said, hey, you know, come over here, Duel, and he would jump in and start waving his hand and his sword around, going, aha, it's Duel. Yes. And so I liked his little flourishes. Every time the camera panned over to him, you could hear him going, aha, aha, as he was moving his sword around. And Duel, yes, living up to his name.
When I was strong enough, I dedicated my life to the study of fencing.
Okay, so that's where we have gotten to. We have a lot of table setting happening with these first two episodes, with the formation of the army last week and God about to say something really important to Moses this week. So this leaves me excited for next week's episode. Do you think we're going to get our big battle sequence? Is that what God's about to announce, that he's heard from the Amalekites and they're coming and everyone needs to get ready? I'll put my money on that. What do you think?
It's got to be a battle, because we've put so much time and effort into arranging everything behind the scenes. Then again, as I say that, I'm well aware that God has previously mentioned opposing armies and dropped the ball completely and just completely ignored them. He kind of uses it as a bit of a boogeyman. I think he's using it as a way to get people to move and get people to do things and to scare them into action. Say, oh, there's this army, you know, you got to be prepared for. Da-da-da-da-da. So on the one hand, I think surely there must be some action coming. On the other hand, I know what's happened so far. So
We will find out next week.
We will indeed. So with that, I will say to you and to the listener, Deanna, pod be with you.
And pod be with you, Marcus.
Amen.
Amen.
To continue the conversation, follow us on social media at Wrath of Pod. To get in touch, email us at mail@wrathofpod.com. Pod be with you.
All views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this podcast are our own and are presented for entertainment and commentary purposes only. Any third-party music, clips, or other media are included solely for the purpose of critique, commentary, review, or transformative use, all of which fall within fair use. We make no claim of ownership over included third-party material, which remains the property of its respective owners. This podcast is not affiliated with, endorsed by, or sponsored by any of the creators, owners, or distributors of included media.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.